Hello and welcome to the Cruise Consulting Founders and Friends podcast. I'm your host, Healy Jones. I'm joined today by Ben Parr, a well-known AI founder, investor, writer. Dive into a lot of the cool trends that are shaping AI, and we're going to learn from him what it takes to run a profitable AI company, which I would say amazing, not too many of those. But first, a quick word from our sponsor.
Hey, this is Healy Jones, VP of Financial Strategy here at Cruise Consulting. And I want to say thanks to our podcast sponsor, Arc. At Cruise, we've got a number of clients successfully using Arc to manage their deposits, payments, access financing, all in one place. One of the things that Arc provides that's really great is over $250,000 in FDIC coverage. Their insurance program goes beyond the standard limit, and it secures up to $525,000. Startups that have even more cash than that can go and access treasury solutions that provide yield and safety. If you're a startup looking for a secure financial solution that can help you scale, please check out our sponsor, Arc, at arc.tech.
And we're back. We're joined by Ben Parr. Ben was the co-editor of Mashable. He's the co-founder of an AI company that I guess we can maybe still call it a startup, even though it's a profitable business now. He is an active investor in AI. He writes a column on AI for The Information, and he has his own newsletter called The AI Analyst. Ben, how are you doing?
I am great. I'm now thinking about what is the actual definition of a startup. Is it based off of the valuation? Is it based off of the number of years it's been around? Is it based off of both? So like, what is or isn't a startup? I feel like I've had that question asked to me over and over again 1,000 times, and I still don't have a framework for picking it. But like, if you're a $1 billion company and you did it in 2 years, are you a startup? I don't know.
That's a great question. I think about it in terms of where are you taking risk when you found a business. So obviously someone who starts a dry cleaner, it could be a startup business, but they're not taking business model risk in the same way that someone that starts like your company that you started where no one was using AI for anything back in 2016, really, right? So you took sort of different levels of risk. That's kind of how I like to think about it.
So then that gets into another layer, which is like, I for sure consider anyone who's like, you're starting a dry cleaning business, you're opening a restaurant, you are an entrepreneur, period, end of discussion. But wouldn't what they're starting also be a startup? Or does it not count? Or is startup exclusive to the domain of venture capital tech? Here we got into the philosophy. That's not even what we're supposed to talk about, but I like going on tangents.
All right, yeah. Nice. Well, that's a good tangent. I'm going to dial it back and let's talk about your startup, Octane, which, again, is it a startup or not? We'll call it a startup for the purpose of this conversation, but you started it back in 2016 and it was an AI business in 2016. What were you thinking?
We're thinking that the future of communication between consumers and brands was going to be not through websites, but through conversation and through chat. And one way you facilitate that is through AI. My co-founder, Matt Schlecht, who had a product at Ustream and was in Y Combinator alum in the early days alongside in the same class as Coinbase and Instacart. You know, he was in China years back and he realized that back then, 2015, that almost all the conversation and almost all the business happened over, you know, messaging apps and WeChat, and realized that would eventually come stateside. So we started building a business, especially when Facebook first launched the Messenger platform, which, you know, we built some of the earliest chatbot technology. We have multiple patents in our name on chatbots, interestingly enough, long before there were large language models to make them actually good. And we had to hack together stuff with neural networks and, NLP and all sorts of stuff. And it's serviceable, and lots of celebrities use our software, like Lindsay Lohan, Kiss, Aerosmith, Jason Derulo, Rick Ross. I have stories to the moon.
Well, your user conferences must be pretty fun then.
Back in the day.
I imagine the bar bill gets a little out of hand.
We never got to the point with that product of having user conferences, although that would have been fantastic. The problem was the technology wasn't quite there, and celebrities don't pay. But e-commerce, our software was working really well for them in printing them money, and so we focused on building a business. And we have built over the course of nearly a decade of pain and suffering, a profitable AI business, which I don't know how many of those you know, Healy, but I can't think of too many off the top of my head.
I can think of one. And I'm talking to him right now. So yeah, there's not a lot at all. What does it take to have a profitable AI business? Like, what does that even mean? I understand. We have worked for an accounting firm. I understand the metrics here, but like, what? How do you do it?
Well, okay, a couple things. One, overnight success of a decade. You have to. The rule number one is you don't die. Like, you have to not die. Now, if you can't find any product market fit, that is like one thing. You need to be really lean and experiment on product market fit before you try to raise more dollars or you try to do more things. You have to be like, does this really have product market fit? Like, constantly. And then once you do kind of find that, it's a lot of like, can you, like, the AI part only matters so much. Like, in the end, customers are looking for something that makes their lives better. And generally, my thesis and my co-founder's thesis on AI deals, for example, is that AI will allow us to build businesses, everyone to build businesses that are like better than their non-AI counterparts. I really do think that there will almost certainly be, you know, an AI-powered business, whether it's an existing one or a new one that hasn't been started yet, that will power almost everything in almost every vertical. And AI being a very broad term, and that's a whole different tangent. But we found a product that our customers really love, being able to build quizzes and do product recommendations leveraging the AI that we built for, it's, you know, we're 3,500, 4,000 e-commerce brands. We're growing. And these brands love our software and use our software, and it makes them money. It just also so happens to leverage AI to do the product recommendations and to write the questions for the quizzes and that sort of thing. And so the AI, like, the best kind of companies are going to be ones where you interact with it, but you don't even really think about it being an AI company. It's just like, it's just better than the alternative. And we're going to get there long term with, you know, you don't think of Snapchat and Uber as mobile app companies, but really they are. Like, that's like, they don't exist without the Apple and the iPhone. It's going to be the same thing with AI in a few years, but right now I think we're starting to see the great experimentation era of AI, and there's still a lot of businesses to be built, and it's long-term too. You could still build a huge business on top of the iPhone. Same thing with AI. It's going to just be a core fabric. Same way that almost every company you start now is an internet company.
So I'm a founder starting an AI company. I aspire to having a business that's leanly financed like Octane was, that's operating and generating profits. Other than, you know, some of the advice you just gave, like, what other advice would you have for founders in terms of how they can achieve a profitable AI startup?
Hiring is hire as less little as you can. Like, especially a few years ago, the metric of success, or like the like vanity metric, was like how many people are on your team. And I still get that question. And you want, you know, for your ego, for something else, to be like, I've got 150 people and I can say words and they're all like, ooh and ah. Because as a founder, you see that. Like, you see that. Now, it's not a really useful metric, especially now. It's just burns money if you hire a lot of people and you don't. It just burns money. You could do things a lot leaner, especially leveraging AI, which is probably the second one, which is like, only hire when you absolutely have to and leverage AI internally.
That's, yeah.
AI for sales, AI for marketing, build your own internal AI tools, AI for ops. There's new tools being built and tools that you can build internally that will make your business a lot more efficient. And if you could resist the idea that you need to hire a lot of people to be popular, to build a business, then you can build something really great. It's just, in the end, when people raise money, they end up hiring a lot of people, more than they actually need. And then it's really hard to scale back after that. And instead, you could keep more of that money, scale really thoughtfully, and build a bigger business over time. Because the number one rule, again, of startups is, if you're not dead, you have a chance. Think Pinterest. Think Roblox. They were doing nothing for years, and then they went boom. Oh, like overnight success. But it was overnight success over the course of 8 years for each of them, something like ridiculous like that.
I strongly agree. We're seeing a lot of our companies that are maybe not AI companies, but traditional software service businesses trying to stay lean and mean here. So they're raising real amounts of money, but they're not ramping up headcount like crazy. And the other thing that we're noticing is that like a big slug of our clients, like over 60% of our clients, are paying OpenAI for something. And they're also paying, you know, GitHub Copilot, and people are purchasing these tools now. What are the tips for helping yourself and helping your employees understand where they could try to use AI instead of just going and hiring another person?
So we teach our entire team how to leverage AI. In fact, my co-founder and I teach a course on AI called Co-Working with AI. It's on maven.com. And we teach this course to teach, you know, executives how to leverage AI for greater productivity. We teach things like optimized prompting. And so, you know, the biggest thing for getting a team to be more efficient with AI is to make them, is to have them use it every day. A lot of the problem is just habit formation, because if you just use AI, you have a tab open with your ChatGPT every day, you're going to use it, you're going to get better. And if you rely on it a little bit more, you're going to end up with a better, and you're going to end up doing more and being better at it, just like anything else. We taught our team how to leverage AI. We taught our team how to do optimized prompts. We asked them like what they used AI for. And the end result is they think in terms of AI. They think about how they could leverage this to write content or to make things. You know, some of them make GPTs. A lot of it is really just getting into the mindset and getting them to use it and asking them on your calls, like, what did you use AI for? Even if it's for personal stuff, the habit formation really matters. And then once you get to that point, then the team starts thinking more about how could I build something or a specialized use case or find a specific tool. Because there's lots of amazing tools beyond a ChatGPT or a Midjourney or a DALL-E 3 that can make your life a lot easier if you just look for a few minutes.
Very cool. So, you know, that leads me to a question. You know, as someone who's an analyst of AI, we see there are these different competing large language models. I'm hearing a lot of people ask questions around where's the value chain going to lie? Like, is the large language model going to be the place where people make a lot of money, or is it something like, where are the real business opportunities here versus some sort of underlying infrastructure that gets competed away in terms of margin and potential?
Everywhere. I hate the discussion. I hate the discussion of, you know, which part of the layer. The answer is both. Like Apple, again,
nice.
You know, accrued a lot in Google, a lot of value on the App Store layer. You know, that's just two companies. There'll be more companies than that for the AI layer. And then there's a bunch of stuff built for analytics for mobile apps and things like that I consider part of the infrastructure layer. And then there's thousands of apps on top of the iPhone that a bunch of whom have become multi-billion dollar companies. It's the same with AI. There's definitely opportunity on the infrastructure layer. It always starts with that. That's why OpenAI and Anthropic and these other LLM companies are, you know, getting such nice valuations. They are infrastructure for doing this, but there's a lot of interesting applications in different places, legal and in accounting and in parenting. I've seen everything. And they're real businesses, and they have technology that they're building on top of it. Same way where, like, you build on top of AWS, you're not going to build a server, but you're going to go and build a lot of other technology on top. It's the same thing. You might, like, have a unique data set and then build a bunch of AI on top of it. And it's not just generative AI, which is the topic of the day right now. AI is such a big world, like, and I have slides in some of my other decks where I, like, show, like, the AI, it's in actually the trends deck that I put out. AI is such a huge ecosystem. Generative AI is a tiny portion of deep learning, which is a small portion of machine learning, which is a small portion of AI overall.
So you're basically saying you think there's enough opportunity there. This is so transformational that there's a lot of good places to benefit, including you're optimistic that some of these big models are gonna get something done. I think this is the chart you're talking about in terms of the just overall market map and the size. And, you know, we've got transformer models, which are inside of generative AI, inside of deep learning and neural networks, inside of machine learning, inside of it's.
Yeah, exactly.
Pretty amazing. Yeah. Awesome. Cool. Well, so I know that you like to invest some in AI businesses. I'd like to learn a little bit from your sort of perch what you're seeing are the most interesting places to consider investing in right now in AI.
So I'll say first, in the end, it's always about the fundamentals. And it doesn't matter whether it's AI or it's Web3 or whatever, you know, or space or whatever it is. the fundamentals matter. Do the founders fit the problem that they're tackling? Are they extraordinary people? Are they founders that can adapt really quickly? Is it, you know, those are like a couple of the like things. In addition to, you know, are they tackling a big enough market? How quickly? What is the traction? Like, these are like, there's a reason why they're standard questions, because they really do matter when it comes to building a business. Just because you put .ai in the name of your business doesn't mean that, like, you have built a successful business. You know, the competition might be even be higher. And then when you go out, like, when, like, those are the couple of things that I think a lot about. And then kind of gets down to, what is this being applied to? And is AI the main way that you could apply it? Like, the one of the best or most unique ways you could apply it? Because there's lots of businesses I see where it's, they're growing at an okay rate, you know, they're like, they're scrapping by, and they can, you know, they'll build a real business. A lot of people can. But is it a venture backable business? And they're very different things. A venture backable business has to be able to grow really quickly, get to the multi-billion dollar valuations, has to make hundreds of millions in revenue. It's a very different thing, you know? So that's like, I think a lot about those kind of things. So I'm really looking for AI companies that are disrupting historically non-tech industries. I think AI being applied to medicine or real estate or legal or all sorts of areas that you wouldn't think. Waste management, I saw recently. All sorts of areas where you can build, I think, real businesses. And then I'm thinking a lot about, you know, how autonomous agents can transform the world. And then I'm thinking longer term about, AI is definitely going to make it so that you can build a bigger business with less people. I made a prediction that got a lot of flack, where I thought there would be a 3 or 5 person company worth $1 billion in the near future, and they were using AI for everything else. I think Sam Altman tried to one up me and be like, we're going to be a 1 person company worth $1 billion, which I also believe is, we're already, like, it's not even that far of a leap. Like, there was like 12, 13, 15 people at Instagram when it got acquired for $1 billion. That's over a decade ago.
Right.
So there's so much to do, you know?
Yeah, so, and I definitely agree. We are seeing clients come to us, or that are successful raising funding, that are applying AI to different verticals. And it's actually amazing, the verticals that we're seeing. It's not just kind of the standard, even the easy ones that you think of, like legal or like accounting or something like that. There's all sorts of other verticals that that it is being applied to. And
anything where there's a lot of data or there's a lot of repetitive processes can be greatly enhanced by AI.
So any particular companies that you've been advising or investing in recently that you find are like super interesting, you want to talk about?
A few I can't talk about. Early couple years ago, I became advisor to a company called Augie, augxlabs.com. And the founder was, you know, the head of product over at Warner Media. And I've known him for a long time. So I was going to always like want to help him. But he's built like one of the key generative storytelling platforms. You put in a prompt or maybe a couple of ideas, and it can make an entire video based off of like an audio or a prompt or all sorts of things. You know, they raised an oversubscribed seed round recently. You know, he's been really heads down executing. I think I see a lot of super interesting companies. And I hate when I have to like tell a whole bunch of, because I'm very picky. I'm really laser focused on the set of AI companies I think can get to venture scale. Because, you know, it's really hard.
Angel investments, that's where you have to do, for sure.
Right.
Yeah, totally. But Augie sounds pretty cool. And I buy the idea that AI can help you storytell. I've got kids and they like me to tell them stories, and I have to admit occasionally I've been using AI to do it for me, and it's done a pretty good job, although ChatGPT is getting a little redundant with some of the storylines, but it works. Like, you can use it to produce stuff.
This is where, you know, great entrepreneurs are making it so that it creates new kinds of outputs, and it's going to only get crazier with, you know, GPT-5s and new models and all sorts of things, and there's new ways to process this data too. It's going to get cheaper. I came out with a 110-page deck on the state of AI investing. I'm expecting things like Mamba and Solid, like liquid neural networks, to make everything cheaper for entrepreneurs to build businesses on top of the AI stack, because it'll only get – like it's just the law of everything. It'll only get cheaper, as you can imagine, to build like on top of these large language models. Like the Moore's Law just always applies to new technologies. It's cheaper than ever. You don't have to pay for thousands of servers like you used to start a business. You don't have to pay, you know, tens of thousands of dollars to host stuff. It just keeps on going down the same way.
Yeah. So right now – our average client that's spending money with OpenAI is spending like $1,500 a month, which is actually kind of a big number, but the median is much lower. It's about $60. So there are some API users who are pretty intensely using it. And then there's a lot of folks that have, you know, 2, 3, 4 seat licenses that are just busting it out to make individuals more productive, either in coding or marketing or whatever task that they're in. So it is amazing though, how broad even one tool like that can go. Like that's ridiculous. Like, are you seeing a lot of tools that can go that broad? Like it's just amazing to me that like ChatGPT can be used by your financial analyst who is doing stuff in Excel and somebody who's coding and a marketing person. Like it's just, how is one tool applicable to all of them? That's amazing.
This is an exception to the rule, is like the honest, like it is very difficult to build a business like that, and OpenAI is truly one of a kind. I don't think it's advisable to most founders to try to build a business that applies to everybody. You know, mm-hmm. Sam Altman's been around the block. He was the head of YC. He's done this a few times. I've known him for a long time. So, and he wasn't necessarily trying to do that. He was just putting out an experiment that went viral, and then everything happened. So sometimes this stuff happens by accident, but that one's a rare exception to the rule, and it's a combination of timing and interface and technology and luck. And I have seen almost no other kind of technology that can do that. You know, large language models are very unique in that front. I think we'll see more like AI assistants and autonomous agents and things, but they're leveraging a lot of the same stuff that has made ChatGPT so popular.
Very cool. All right. So now I have a fun question here. We've got ChatGPT, there's Cloud, there's Bard is now Gemini. Like which there's Perplexity, there's even other ones. Like what's your favorite one to use right now?
I try them all on a semi-regular basis. I probably will actually do a newsletter, benpar.com, where I compare all of them again. I did it last year just to see how I feel. ChatGPT is still my default right now, but I've tried new things with Claude and Anthropic and Perplexity and others, and they do certain things that others don't. So I'm going to run a more methodical experiment, and then I'll be able to give you a specific answer because I feel like that's what I have to do, and I'm just trying to find a little bit of time to do it.
Okay. Well, you better hurry up before they release something new, because then you'll have to do it again. So.
Well, you know what? Then I will have incorporated that into my next one. I'm just going to be a regular thing I do every 6 months to a year just to test everything. At least once a year at the worst, but maybe every 6 months given everything moves so quickly.
Awesome. So let's dive into that AI trends report that you published recently. And I'm going to share a screen here. This is the – these are your forecasting AI trends in 2024. And I'm not going to read through this, but let's go through it here. Like what are you forecasting for 2024?
So I'm going to talk quickly about 2023, which is there was definitely an increase in AI deals, although nowhere still near the size of 2021, just because 2021 was the greatest anomaly ever in terms of venture deals. It's hard for those who haven't been through multiple cycles. It was such an anomaly in terms of what the broader landscape looked like. But it's picking up in AI.
That was crazy talk.
Right. And 1 out of 4 deals, I think, last year was AI. I think that number might even increase this year. And AI deals definitely had a mark, like were at higher valuations of their non-AI counterparts. 20-ish% if you were seed and pre-seed, which is not so bad of a bump, versus Series B, which was like a 50 to 60% bump, which is really hard if you are a late-stage investor trying to get a deal, like a steal of a deal. But I'm expecting this year in 2024, for those who are listening in 2024, you know, we'll see how many of these are right. I don't think they're anything crazy, but there'll be more AI unicorns in 2024 than last year, and there were a decent number. Deal making will increase slightly. especially as interest rates fall, which I expect to happen later this year. There'll definitely be more AI exits. I think what we're starting to start to see is like people started AI companies. They built some interesting stuff, but they maybe aren't having an easy time raising the next round. They sell for to a bunch of other companies who want to have that AI talent. I think that trend will really kick off in 2025 when people start running out of money. But I think you'll see more of it in 2024. There'll be a lot more focus on verticalized solutions this year, which is I'm already seeing AI for very specific verticals versus last year, which was like more broader marketing. Those areas are usually taken up pretty early in the first round of, you know, building. And then, you know, there's like other stuff. Like I don't expect copyright to be an issue for this year. It's going to take a long time to figure out, you know, the legality of certain things in AI. But the long term is like the cat is out of the bag. There are models that are like you could download them and put them on your computer or on your phone. You're going to see more open source models, and it's going to make it so that people could go build this stuff even if OpenAI got sued into oblivion, which I don't expect they will be. And I think lastly, AI startups, one big trend I think I am seeing and I expect to continue, less money raised overall, especially in the later stages. Founders still need money in those early stages, seed, pre-seed, series A. I'm seeing less, you know, need to raise more money after that. You can get profitable after that, especially if you found some product market fit. People are hiring less. Now the brag is how few people do you have on your team? How many AIs are you using? And I think that means that early stage investments will be really great deals for those investors who are investing at pre-seed and seed. That's why I'm doing it, because I think you're going to have huge returns on that front if you're investing at the early stage, because I think they're going to be able to build big businesses. They don't need a lot of capital. There's a lot of upstream money for them, and there's lots of opportunity to build big businesses with less people.
That's awesome. That's good, because we don't want to repeat 2021 where people just wasted money, right? So that's a good thing.
I mean, I'm happy to have a 2021 again for myself. That'd be great. But for the industry as a whole, it wasn't healthy for sure. I think we're still in an unhealthy, VCs are holding on to their money in part because LPs are holding on to their money, the people who invest in VCs. And I think it'll open up a hair as interest rates go down. And why interest rates matter, for those who don't know, it's because, you know, the people who give money to VCs can decide, okay, I need to make a certain return every year on my investment. And right now, putting money into bonds or other safe instruments makes you much more money than it did 2 years ago because of the interest rates. It'll make less money, theoretically, later this year and especially next year if the interest rates do go down. But they haven't gone down yet. They won't go down immediately. And they certainly won't go back down to the 0% that we basically had at the end of the 2010s, which, you know, that's why we had such a bull run in VC. If you are only making like 1 or 2% on your cash, and VC offers, even with some risk, the opportunity to make 8, 10, 12, 20% more or more on your cash, you would do that. But you don't need to do that if you're going to make 8% and you're going to get 6% on your just keeping your cash in a savings account, essentially. I know this stuff can sound boring, but it is actually really – I always tell founders one other thing, to really think about the mindset of VCs when they are fundraising, because VCs are, you know, trying to raise their own money from other investors. And so the way you position yourself is going to matter to them, because, you know, some of them need to get markup. Some of them are looking for specific types of deals. They need to sell you to their LPs or to their prospective LPs. And so having that knowledge will – help you a lot with understanding what's going to happen in the market and why investors are saying the things they are saying.
For sure. In fact, you know, not to pitch Cruise too much, but we do have a whole bunch of information on our website around how venture capitalists make money, how they think, how they evaluate investments. It's, you know, it behooves us to have our clients understand that stuff so they can be more successful in their fundraising. So, you know, Ben, where can people learn more about you? Where can they find you online?
So I publish a lot of stuff on benparr.com, benparr.com. That's my newsletter, The AI Analyst. And I publish a lot of stuff on all my socials at benparr on literally every social network. I do a column with the information on AI. I post those things on my social regularly. So I do something once a month or two. I'm trying to get to it even more. And, you know, OctaneAI is OctaneAI.com. But stay tuned. I got some cool stuff coming out, announcing stuff. It's going to be a crazy year for me and I think for the AI industry as a whole. So it'll all be in BenPar.com is what I will say.
Amazing. Well, and we'll have you back on here in a few months as well. It sounds like you got some neat stuff you're cooking up that you can't talk about now. But we'll have you back on as well. Ben, thank you so much. It's always fun to catch up with you. And let's do it again.
Let's do it.